So, have you ever met any of these? Can you identify them in your organization? Have you perhaps attached names to some of them and recognized the difficulty you face in engaging these people, each on his or her own ground, each on his or her own terms, each in his or her own diabolically clever and uniquely manipulative way? Have you ever confronted the implacable disinterest of the grunt, the brash greed of the mercenary, the shocking rage of the failed patriot, the naive passion of the avowed student, the dizzying ambition of the inveterate inventor, the impenetrable smile of Mr. Nice Guy? Then when I say you can't manage people, you can only manage the system, the process through which people produce results, you now understand better what I mean. The E-Myth Manager is not a psychologist, knows that to presume to become one is at best an impossibly perilous path to take, and at worst, the extreme arrogance. No, one can't manage people, and so the only way in which the E-Myth Manager can effectively avoid the inevitable trap which the phenomenon of human strategy has set for him is to start out the process warily. Which is not to say that I believe any of the above strategies was conceived by any one of the people you know, including yourself, intentionally. Nor is any one of us aware we're playing this game. Nor would I attribute any ulterior motive to the nice guy or the grunt or the mercenary. They're all simply doing their own thing, automatically arrived at, unconsciously survived at, and blindly pursuing for no other reason at all. Then it was the strategy they discovered themselves choosing, and that choosing a human strategy is the way we all manage to survive. Be that as it may, people still have to be reckoned with. And to attempt to reckon with people without understanding that we haven't a clue as to what's going on in their highly personalized, subjectively designed psyche at any particular point in time in the day is insanity of the highest order. The E-Myth Manager knows this, and accordingly begins his or her relationship with everyone who wishes to join his or her organization with a great deal of respect and care for the delicacy of the situation. This is what I call the E-Myth Manager's people strategy. At its best, it is a carefully orchestrated process designed to identify the people in front of you and how each is wired, while identifying for them the peculiar nature of the organization they've just come into contact with. Thought of in this way, the E-Myth Manager's people development system is the methodology by which he or she hopefully attracts only the right people to his business, starts them out on the right path, and provides each with the attention they need to hopefully fulfill their own primary aim while enabling the manager to fulfill his strategic objective. But to understand this process fully requires that we go back to the human strategy model elaborated earlier and look at a secondary component of it which determines how it plays itself out in the world. Every human strategy employed is mitigated by two significant modifying characteristics of the human condition. I call these characteristics our level of interior attention and our level of exterior intention. Now stick with me. I think it has already become apparent to the least cynical of you that if the human strategies employed by each of us were all there was to it, in other words, if a grunt is a grunt is a grunt and only a grunt, end of story, we'd all live in an exceedingly flat, cynical world with absolutely no potential for any of us. Pity the poor grunt who lives there, let alone the mercenary, or the inventor, or any one of the myriad others of us who play out our roles in this tumultuous world of ours. No, thank God the grunt is saved from his form of preordained dementia by the equally naturally ordered state of grace which lies in potential for all of us poor mortals in the mitigating form of what I call our level of interior attention and our level of exterior intention. These forces, or you might say these laws, make it possible for the grunt to ascend beyond his unconsciously developed fearful state of gruntness to discover another more rarefied state called human consciousness. Which is to say that to the degree the grunt is conscious of his gruntness, his level of interior attention, and wishes to grow beyond it, his level of exterior intention, he is potentially able to expand his awareness, his humanity, his potential, his very state of being to uninhibited, unimaginable dimensions. In short, a grunt is only a grunt to the degree that his attention and intention lie fallow. But fortunately, as grace would have it, all of us are called, so to speak, to see ourselves in the rarest of moments as we are, not as we have unconsciously elected to be. It is this epiphany, this seeing of our sleeping state, this awareness of our gruntness, which, for a fleeting moment in time, enables each and every one of us to separate from our condition and to reach another, higher level of being, which is the potential for all human beings, and which, with effort, attention, and intention, we can expand beyond the more fleeting moments which happen to us as gifts from the universe, these epiphanies of which I speak, to increasingly persistent levels of consciousness which can only be produced by our wish to produce them. It is just such people the E-Myth Manager is looking for. People who recognize their only two human condition and wish to exceed it. Grunts, mercenaries, students, patriots, nice guys, inventors, to the E-Myth Manager, it doesn't matter what they are, it only matters how aware they are of it and how much they wish to go beyond it. Thought of in this way, the E-Myth Manager regards his business as a school. A school to which are attracted all manner and forms of people playing out their human strategies, but determined to reach beyond them. The school, the business, becomes a place then in which these people support each other in expanding their level of interior attention and their level of exterior intention, knowing that without these two forces, their lives are all but lost. The E-Myth Manager believes that there is no other organization better suited for such work than the businesses we all find ourselves in every day, and that such an organization is a school in the highest sense of the word. And in that school, the E-Myth Manager regards himself as a teacher, and the work of such a business, such a school, is the grist for his educational mill. And the true learning being done in this school evolves from the question, who are we, and how do we live, and what is work, and how does work serve our lives? And the system through which all of this takes place, this highly complex interaction between people who have come together to interact with themselves and their attention and their intention, is organized in such a way that the most deeply honored part of all this is not the result the organization produces on the outside, though that is, of course, a critical component of everyone's commitment, for without the organization succeeding on the outside, out there in the world, there'd be nothing for any of us to do here on the inside. No, the most deeply honored part of all this is the inner growth of each and every individual in their each and every own individual way. In such an organization, in such a school, in such a business, aims are personal first and organizational only second. In short, what each of us wants for our own individuated lives must be clearly understood by each and every one of us if we were to then come to agreement with the business which employs us in order to fulfill its strategic objective. And everyone who joins the business, comes to work in the business, applies himself or herself to the aim of the business, knowing that they are each and every one of them completely responsible for their own lives and their relationship to the organizational commitment they've made consciously, not unconsciously, at the very beginning, and continuously, every single day they choose to participate in the game they're all playing together here. The system through which all of this takes place becomes the tradition and the ritual through which the business is elevated to a much higher level for all who participate in it. The game played in this school is a game of revelation of common intent and of potential transformation for those willing to pursue the game both on a personal as well on a business level. The E-Myth Manager's game, then, is to convey all of this to everyone who comes to his or her door so that they understand completely the personal commitment required. And the personal commitment required is to serve one's self first, not the organization. The personal commitment required is to recognize the human strategy each of us has elected to use and to choose to rise above it, for one's own reason, not for the organization's reason. The organization does not require one to give himself up to the organization's aim. This is not a cult. This is a joint venture. But to have one of one's own, an aim of one's own, which this organization's aim serves while serving its own. The organization's game is not for individuals who join it to give themselves up to it, but to serve it only as it serves their own primary aim. What do you want is the driving question of such an organization. And if you're not interested in the question, please, please, please don't join us here. But if your answer is to become more conscious, more alive, more awake, more active as opposed to passive, more open as opposed to fearful, more expansive rather than more shut down like the proverbial stone, more of who I really am rather than who I've come to be, then, and only then, the business as a school can become an extraordinary place to be. But hear me, there are very few businesses like the one I'm speaking of. And that's why I say the E-Myth Manager's people development strategy is so critical to the evolution of the world, as well as to the evolution of his or her own life. It is not psychology I'm speaking of here, but commitment. Commitment to personal consciousness, commitment to growing beyond where we all find ourselves, commitment to creating an environment in which the integrity of personal responsibility is the norm, in which people are committed to going beyond their ordinary states, to reach out for another state which continually eludes us, the state of uninhibited, unimaginable conscious joy. Every manager needs a marketing strategy. No matter how large or how small his or her organization is, it must engage positively and productively with the outside world. In the case of a manager of administration in a large organization, the outside world consists of vendors, other managers of other departments, people who work in other departments, customers of the organization at large, the financial community, shareholders, and so forth and so on. Ideally, and from a true marketing perspective, everything done on behalf of these constituents by the manager of administration, the people within his or her organization, and the systems and processes developed for that purpose must be communicated effectively before, during, and after every interaction if the marketing strategy is to be fully realized. What is the marketing strategy? It is the manner through which any organization achieves true, perceived, highly differentiated value in the mind of its constituents. Marketing, therefore, is defined here as the total capability of any organization, no matter how small or how large, to produce a true, perceived, highly differentiated value in the mind of its constituents, who I have come to call in my book, The PowerPoint, an organization's primary influencers. The four key categories of preference of these primary influencers are visual, emotional, financial, and functional preferences. Therefore, the marketing strategy of any organization is the intentional design or organization of these four categories of preference so that each is intentionally and dramatically influenced in a preferentially unique manner. The E-Myth Manager has, as his or her primary objective then, the coordination of all of the component parts of his organization to come together in a way which synchronistically, seamlessly, and harmoniously achieve this end, this impact. Big job, tall order. Because the parts of any organization run the gamut from the way your people look, sound, and act, the way they are dressed, the processes each uses in the fulfillment of each primary influencer's needs and wants, the colors of the carpet, the walls, the box you ship your stuff in, the speed, the ease, the perceived generosity or lack of same with which results are produced or weren't, the nicks in the wall, the stains in the carpet, the excess papers on a desk, the spotless windows, the worn tires on your truck, indeed everything and anything which affects the senses is a necessary focus of your marketing strategy. Nothing can be overlooked. And when it is, you always, always pay a price for it. There is no such thing as a non-event when it comes to your marketing strategy. Nothing that's seen, felt, experienced, heard goes unseen, unfelt, unexperienced, or unheard, no matter how unconscious you and your primary influencers might be concerning the perceived or unperceived impact, either positive or negative, of the sensory stimulus. The senses see all. Senses cannot not see. Senses take in everything. You must believe this, because to not believe it leaves even the most important and obvious things to accident. Everything matters is the only rule of the game. Everything. And so, in the formulation of a marketing strategy, the eMyth manager must draw a visual, emotional, financial, and functional set of conclusions about his or her primary influencers, and then set about to construct a completed picture, a vision, of how this affects the look, act, feel, and sound of his or her organization's day-to-day reality. Ask yourself these following questions, and then seek out the answers, and your marketing strategy will be in good shape. How do you get the eye to see something it's not trained to see? How do you get the mind to think that which it's not trained to think? How do you get the ear to hear that which it's not trained to hear? How do you get the body to do that which it's not trained to do? The answer to these questions is only through repetition, through practice, and through the incessant communication to your organization of the necessity for a highly intentional, increasingly effective marketing strategy, which is manifested throughout the organization in everything it does, visually, emotionally, functionally, and financially, and by addressing each one of these categories of preference aggressively, one preference at a time, by drilling down to the finest detail within the organization as to how each and every one of these preferences play themselves out in what you do, in who you are, and how you look. If every one of the six preceding steps is essential to the health of the new organization, and they are, then this step, your business development system, is the core process through which all of those steps are realized on a continuing basis. The manager's business development system is the process through which continuous improvement occurs and through which the organization is continually renewed in spirit and in design. Earlier, I spoke of innovation, quantification, and orchestration, the key components of the management system. Here, I'm speaking about the manner through which initiatives are inspired, born, implemented, and completed in the truly entrepreneurial organization without creating undue chaos, but without also feeding the manager's inbred and often inordinate need for a high sense of order, the entrepreneur's equally often inordinate need for a high sense of control, and the technician's often obsessive need for daily, almost hourly, personal and proprietary authority over the work he or she performs. This is the role of the eMyth manager's business development system, and at the core of it lies what I have come to call the multiplex organization. The multiplex organization is one in which accountability arises from any part of the organization and anyone in it, recognizing and responding to an opportunity which fits within the strategic objective of the organization, but which has not been responded to or even recognized perhaps in the past. I call this floating accountability. It is not hierarchical, it is not functional, it is not predictable, it is not structured, but it is a system of invention and implementation which is a key ingredient of the multiplex organization, which differentiates it dramatically from what has been known as the monoplex organizational strategy of the past, a strategy which persists in most organizations to this day and which is becoming increasingly inflexible and ineffective. Now, before you say with an astonished, "Are you kidding me? Gerber's now changing his tune about organization and about structure to say that anything's okay," let me go on to describe the very important phenomenon which we at the eMyth Academy are playing with in real life every day. The multiplex organization which we are becoming, or in fact, have over time already become, but are struggling with every day, is a dynamic system built upon the reality that in each and every one of us is an entrepreneur waiting to be born. I believe that's true of everyone in my company and everyone in yours. If one defines the entrepreneurial personality as the inventor, the creative part of ourselves, the one in which every one of us who is excited about questions of what if, then you know that except in the most dissolute, crystallized personas among us, there is a wish to create beyond the present boundaries of our existence, and that within that wish to create beyond the current boundaries of our existence is an energy, a passion, which is most often not rewarded, let alone condoned in most monoplex organizations, but which the multiplex organization regards as the critical component of its business development capability, not for the sake of survival, mind you, but for the sake of continued renewal, which is to say the reinvention of the organization must coincide with the potential for transformation of the individuals within the organization. And that that renewal at the organizational level and that transformation at the personal and individual level comes from the very same source, the very same energy, the very same attention and intention about which I spoke earlier, and that that intention, that attention, is impossible to nurture in any organization which doesn't nurture the entrepreneurial drive and spirit in each and every individual in the organization all of the time. So the multiplex organization of which I speak here is an organization within which new things are sprouting constantly. In our company of only 64 people today, we have on the books some 48 projects being conducted and in various states of completion or undoing. Projects which have absolutely nothing to do with the ongoing operating reality of our business. Meaning that not only are these 64 people engaged in producing results systemically in each and every one of their various areas of responsibility and accountability, but they are as well engaged to the degree each is able, willing, or challenged to invent and then pursue the birth and manifestation of a huge range of initiatives, each of which is something yet to be proved, yet to be structured, yet to be validated, yet to be orchestrated, yet to be documented, yet to be a factotum of our reality as the E-Myth Academy, yet to be justified at all by anyone at all other than in the minds and hearts of those who have agreed to pursue it. Now, the purpose of my telling you this is not to glorify my company, but to tell you that there's an experience we're beginning to trust after 20 years of doing this thing, which tells us that any organization worth its entrepreneurial salt cannot help but to foster invention in great gulping, often seemingly unmanageable leaps, or risk the loss of its vitality and the energy which made it attractive to its people and its customers in the very first place. The question is, of course, how to do it without blowing a gasket. Before answering that question, let me identify the other characteristics of the multiplex organization which differentiate it from the monoplex organization. The multiplex organization drives the development of the company downward, the monoplex organization upward. The multiplex organization strives for diversity within unity, the monoplex organization for unity with as little diversity as possible. The multiplex organization strives for a balance between head and heart. The monoplex organization is primarily a head-driven business. It is more prone to thinking than it is to feeling. The multiplex organization attempts to expand the awareness of the people within it. The monoplex organization attempts to control the awareness of the people within it. Now, there are many other differences between the two types of organizations, but suffice it to say that the multiplex organization is in a constant state of flux created by the dynamics from within the organization, while the monoplex organization is attempting to control the flux which is constantly being forced upon it from outside of the organization. But having said all that, let me get back to the question of the E-Myth Manager's business development system. There are two modes of attention within the E-Myth organization, what I'm calling here the multiplex organization. And these two modes of attention are what I call the manager's attention and the mentor's attention. The manager's attention, as I said earlier, is focused on the systemic reality of the business, while the mentor's attention is focused on an individual's relationship to the systemic reality of the business. In other words, the manager monitors the effectiveness of the system, the mentor monitors and relates to the effectiveness of the people within the system. In the multiplex organization, the manager grows his or her people, and with them, the organization of which they are a part, through the three phases of apprenticeship, craftsmanship, and mastery. The three levels of the organization, the practice, the business, and the enterprise, that is, the technician, the manager, and the entrepreneur. At the entry level into any function of work, every new employee engages in the apprenticeship program appropriate to the function and the work to which he or she is assigned and accepted. Immediately upon being accepted for this assignment, the apprentice is provided a personal mentor, an individual, not the manager, who has already achieved mastery in the particular function to which the apprentice has been assigned. Thus begins a clearly defined process through which the apprentice is engaged in a set number of tasks designed to overcome specific obstacles and achieve specific objectives peculiar to the function he or she is apprenticing. The mentor coaches, challenges, and monitors the apprentice. The apprentice learns the traditions, rituals, and skills set before him while passing through a series of gates, the end of which process is the successful transition to the craftsman level, in which the same process is repeated, only now with a new set of skills and obstacles, both inner and outer, over which he or she is intended to achieve a level of mastery beyond that of the apprenticeship level. Once completing apprenticeship and craftsmanship, the employee is then welcomed into the mastery phase of his or her education. All the while, there are two relationships the new employee must come to grips with, one with the mentor, one with the manager. The mentor is there to make certain the student is not only focused on results, but also on the process through which one is expected to mature in relationship to both the work he or she is expected to do and the way in which he or she is expected to do it. The manager is there to teach the student the correct relationship to the system and how the system has its own reality beyond and at times above that of the student. That the system, though inanimate, has its own tradition, its own requirements, its own structure, which makes up a significant part of the reality of the organization at large. It is the relationship thus forged between the human side of the business and the technology side or system side of the business which creates the organization's unique character, which understanding on the part of the new employee is a critical one to the ongoing health and vitality of the organization, not to say just the organization, but of course the individual himself or herself. Because without such an understanding and the special nature it fosters and respect each employee has for the way we do it here in every multiplex organization, the organization would fall prey to the subjectivism of me versus it, of us versus them, of the business as an object which has little relationship to his people, and the people as an object which have little relationship to the business. The manager and the mentor therefore play a key joint partnership role in the education of people as to the balance between the value of the system and the value of the people using the system. There is also in this business development, people development model / system, the fostering of a very real understanding in a new employee that he or she is not accountable to the manager or to the mentor. They are wholly accountable to themselves and the commitment they have made upon joining the organization to excel at what they've been given the opportunity to learn there. The E-Myth Manager is a model in my mind for the new entrepreneurial organization, which I have called here at times the E-Myth Brand Business, the Multiplex Organization, the Intimate Organization, the Flexible Inflexible Organization, the Business as a School, the place in which transformation is intended not as a byproduct of the business, but as the primary product of the business. I've also said that while all this is going on, the E-Myth Manager has got to pay attention to the business of the business, which is growing, improving, and of course making money. To all of these objectives, I commit myself to your growth, as well as you to mine. And in the process, perhaps I've also given you something of value to think about.
This is the end of Side 11. Please fast forward the tape to the end to queue up Side 12 for your listening.
Marketing development, three things you got to know about marketing. Everybody's got to market. What's marketing? Lead generation. What's lead generation? Attracting people to your business. You got to attract people to your business, whether those people be employees, whether those people be prospects, whether those people be potential clients, whether those people be suppliers, whether those people be your managers, whether the people be the CEO of the company. You got to attract people to your business. You got to learn how to communicate with power, with passion, with conviction, in a way that attracts people to your door. And there are only three things you need to learn to do that. The first is called demographics. Demographics describes who they are. Who are the people you're attracting to your business? Demographically, what does demographics mean? The actual statistical reality of the person in question. How old are they? What sex are they? What is their education? Are they married? Are they single? Where do they stand in the organization, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You can demographically understand the people to whom you report. You can more effectively do what you need to do to attract them to your cause. What's your cause? To fulfill the strategic objective of the firm as stated, better than anybody has ever done it before. Yeah, I know that's impossible. Yeah, I know you can't do that. Yeah, I know everybody says that, but hear me, because you understand marketing, which is nothing more than effective communication, you're going to do this better than anyone else. Because few managers ever learn it. Few managers ever think they need to know it. Most managers in operations and production and administration and finance and data processing at all believe that marketing is something the company does to get customers who create turmoil in our lives. That's what most people in operations believe. Here come the customers, close the doors, right? More business is bad. Uh-oh. Marketing is the thing you must do in your organization. Seize a position in the mind of the people who make the decisions in your organization to enable you to produce the results that you want. Marketing is absolutely essential no matter where you are in the organization. And every manager in every organization better learn it. You better learn it. Until you learn it, you cannot affect anything. And so demographics is the first thing. Who? Who is what demographics asks. Who? Who's the customer? Who's the customer? Who's the customer? Who's the customer? As much as you can possibly get about that person is required. Second is psychographics. You've all heard all this stuff, but you don't do it. Psychographics is what moves them to buy. So effectively, what does psychographics really say? Psychographics asks, what do they want? What do they want? What do they want what? What do they want visually, emotionally, functionally, financially? What do they want? Vice President of Finance has different psychographics than the Vice President of Operations has different psychographics and the Vice President of Marketing has different psychographics from the Vice President of Production has different. Do you understand what I mean? The cardiologist has different psychographics from the radiologist. They act different, think different, feel different, buy different. They want different colors. They want different forms. They have different emotional proclivity. They want different functions. They have a whole different set of reference points. You must understand the reference points of the person and people you're trying to move in what direction, in the direction you need them to move in to get what you want, to get you what you want to do what, to make it easier for you to produce the result. What's the result? The strategic objective. See how clear this thing is? This is not about politics. This is not about manipulation. This is not about getting a better job. It's about doing the work you've ethically determined you're there to do. The reward is the work that you do in the process of producing the result you're there to produce. That's the reward. And to learn how. and that learning process of engaging with those 125 people in a way that nobody has ever engaged with those people before, including the old you. So understand, what have we got? We got a thing called old co and new co. What I'm saying is you're about to create new co. You're starting from scratch. Now, I know this sounds like a lot of idealistic claptrap, and if you were to go back to do this, you're in serious trouble, but hear me. What did I say? You do this over time. You do not hurry this thing. You do not rush this thing. You are not able to rush this thing. You don't have the skills to rush this thing. But you have to sustain this thing. And this thing is sustained when you're clear about what you want. Until you're clear about that, all the rest of this is a waste of energy. You get it? A waste of energy. Because you're building it on sand. I'm telling you, this takes a warrior. This takes a warrior. And a warrior knows where he or she stands. Has anybody here ever known a warrior? I'm talking about somebody who knows what he or she wants and persists and persists and persists and persists. If you know someone like that, stay close to him. There is nothing like it. Because most people are not. Most people flow with the wind, go where everything's go, wonder what's going to happen because they're doing it. And there they are. So we're creating NUCO. Demographics, psychographics, and what's the last? It's called geographics. If this were a real customer outside there in the world, geographics is critical because it defines our trading zone. You understand what our trading zone is? It's the area within which we do our business. And we have to understand what that is. So that's marketing, it's communications, it's understanding who it is. We are here to move in the direction they need to be moved, to assist us in creating ease within our organization to produce the strategic objective we're here to produce. And finally, seven. And it's systems. Now, we've been talking about systems all along, but in this particular case, I like to talk about metaphorical systems. And the metaphorical systems in our business, in your area of accountability, are hard systems, soft systems, and information systems. I want to talk a little bit about this. It's absolutely amazing to me how people can walk by obvious omissions and not see them. You know, I ask myself a question, how do you teach somebody to see that which they're untrained to see? How do you teach somebody to hear that which they're untrained to hear? How do you teach somebody to feel that which they're untrained to feel? How do you teach somebody to think that which they're untrained to think? You can go to hotel after hotel after hotel, and I do. I'm in a trip all the time. I'm traveling here. I'm traveling there. Upscale hotels, downscale hotels, middle-of-the-scale hotels. You know, you get what you get when you get there, and I try to get as best as I can, but sometimes it's just impossible. So you go where you go, and you get what you get, and you see what you see. And what you see is this astonishing reality, which is, and I'm talking now about hard systems. Hard systems are the visual components of your business. I speak to you as a manager when I say your business. I'm saying that if you were to take all of the businesses within an enterprise, all of the businesses within an enterprise, it would stun you, astonish you. How completely dysfunctional most businesses are visually. And so you walk by a hall in a hotel, and you know the place was painted once. right? I mean, it was, you know, when they began it and somebody had a great idea and said, hey, let's create a hotel. And, you know, they got an architect and they had contractors come in and they actually built the place, you know. They selected the carpet, they selected the paint, they selected the furnishings, et cetera, and so forth. You know, they did that. You know, they had high hopes. You remember that song? And something happened between then and now. You might call it reality. I don't know. You might call it going to sleep. What you might call it is that somebody at the end lost connection with what somebody at the beginning hoped. So somehow there was a lapse between what the person imagined he or she was going to create, spent the money creating, and actually created for a moment. You know, the sucker was new at one time. Between then and now, everybody went to sleep. It's called entropy. And so this extraordinary vision that it started out to be turns into what you see today, which is effectively the product of the sleep of generations of people who've come and gone, come and gone, come and gone. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Disneyland Disney created a standard at the outset of the company. I talk about this everywhere I go. So this is not new to you. Essentially, what he said is that when somebody comes into the park 35 years after the very first time, they're going to find it brand new. And the only way you can do that is if you paint everything before it needs it. The only way you're going to do that is if you steam clean the park, the sidewalks, the roads, everything, continuously. So effectively, the vision is this place is going to be as new 35 years after the very first time. And the only way that's going to happen is if we do this. And so this, painting it before it needs it, replacing light bulbs before they go out. You understand? Can you imagine the vision at the beginning saying, okay, now what we're going to have to do is to paint it before we need it. Well, how will we know if we paint it before it needs it, if it doesn't need it? It's an interesting question, isn't it? How will we know when the light's about to go out so we can change it before it goes out? How will we know how many times we need to steam clean the sidewalks and the streets? We haven't done it. How many times, what way, and what Walt said is we'll find out. But because we're so absolutely 150% committed to that result, and committed to that result because we're Disney, and committed to that result because that's the vision I got in my mind, creating an entertainment venue completely different than any entertainment venue anywhere in the world, and that anybody can do that if they're absolutely committed to it, we'll find out. We will find out. We can find out. It's possible to find out. Let's do it. But you don't do that in your business. You know how things sort of grind into dust in your business? You know, oh, it's this, then it's that, then it's this. Oh, my God, forget it. I mean, it goes, oh, my God, forget it. Man, I can't get them to do that. I can't get them to do this. I told them 42 times to steam clean it. Sucker forgot. Every time they forget, my God, I better do it myself. And then you end up doing it yourself. And now you're out. Imagine walled out, steam cleaning the streets and the park, you know, every night. Can you just see the boss doing that? I mean, do you understand that that's how most managers do and get results in their business? Because they honestly believe that they're supposed to get people to do it, get people to do it, get people to do it, and effectively, ladies and gentlemen, you can't, but you still got to get it done. When you understand you can't get your people to do it and finally realize that you don't have the power, then you're going to have to figure another way. And that's where the innovation comes. See, the innovation comes for the unswerving commitment to get the result. A result that nobody could believe in a million years is possible to get. And to begin to become the inventor of the business that does that. And so I'll tell you, Disney figured out how to do that, because they do it. They're celebrating their 25th anniversary today at Disney World in Florida. They created a whole damn city down there. I mean, you can't create a whole damn city anywhere. You mean a clean city? Yeah, they did that. Are you kidding me? How'd you do that, Walt? If I could see it, I could do it. If I wanted it bad enough. And if I could sustain the passion for the end result. So that's why I say you can only do one thing. Because, man, I'm telling you, if you're trying to do 20, you cannot sustain the passion for them. And you lose track. So hard systems are the most compelling thing of all. Does your business, your people, does the place you work look better than any other place you've ever been in? And you tell me, no, I don't have the money to do that, and I'm telling you, then you miss the whole damn thing, because it's not money I'm talking about. It's the passion for the result I'm talking about. How many of you have ever been in a Nordstrom store? How many of you have ever been in a Gap store? You look at a Gap store, do you see the floors? Do you see the shining oak floors in the Gap store with the extraordinary colors stacked in that metrical, extraordinary, visually compelling way that they design the store so that it works every time? How do you do that, guys? Where you focus your attention. So the hard systems of your business are absolutely critical. The second part of the soft systems. You know, when I say work on your business, not in your business, that is a mantra, it's a formula, it's a way of thinking. And the minute you begin to internalize that way of thinking, begin to see it, on it, not in it, on it, not in it, on it, not in it. What do I mean? The strategic work at the entrepreneurial level of the business, where the enterprise exists, where the vitality of your life is assured. Is on it work, not in it work. At the business level where the manager is, the manager must be working on the process, not in the process. On the process, not in the process. You must become a master of the processes you use in your business to produce every single result you've got in your business, because until you do, you're dependent upon people to do it, and every time you depend upon people to do it, you get disappointed. And the technician, the practitioner, the person in the practice better be working on the practice, because if they are not, they're a slave to the practice and they begin to sound like a machine. How do you keep them from sounding like robots, they tell me, when you have a script? How do you keep them from sounding like robots? They don't get a chance to sound like robots, for God's sake. They're doing all this work on themselves. The vitality of the system. They're engaged in learning what the system means, how it works, why it works, what it means to the strategic objective, why we say it this way rather than that way. The headline of an ad is a miracle. Why this one as opposed to that one? Every extraordinary copywriter will tell you that the difference in this word over that word is the difference between 50 times as opposed to a half of. Do you understand what I'm saying? Focusing on the detail, focusing on the detail, working on it, not just in it, and learning what it all means. Can you imagine if somebody in my sales department were learning what it means, what selling means, what the process means, how to invent an intelligent process for engaging people in an intelligent human way? If they're learning that while doing the work instead of just earning income, can you believe that's possible? Of course it's possible. But understand, if the management is not focused on the hard systems, the soft systems, if the entrepreneur doesn't know that in fact these systems and processes are absolutely critical to the growth of the business, then how in the world do you expect to hire anybody and give them more than just a job for which you're paying them wages from which they'll never, ever escape? See, the sin of McDonald's is just that. The sin of McDonald's is, while they have created the most phenomenal business system the world has ever seen, they do not add value to the people who use it. The value I'm talking about being added in that inner city is to truly transform their understanding of what work means and how to go to work in a completely different way and how to get more from that work than anybody is getting in any junk food restaurant. And I'm telling you, it's possible. It's possible. I know it's possible because I know of thousands upon thousands of small business owners who are doing it and the difference is like the difference between night and day. And then information systems. Without information, you can't do anything. Without information, you can't do anything. Data is not information. Information is not understanding. So it's data, information, understanding. Data is the stuff you get out of the machine. Understanding is the translation from the stuff you get out of the machine into a true picture of what it means. But understanding is knowledge. Understanding is the experience of what it means as you use it and use it and use it and use it. So the old adage, you can hear something and forget it, you could see something and remember it, but not until you do something do you understand it. And that's why apprentice, craftsman, mastery, apprentice, craftsman, mastery, apprentice, craftsman, mastery is so critical to anybody in any organization. There must be a program, a programmatic way through which the practitioner, the technician, is taken from apprenticeship to craftsmanship to mastery, in which they're expected to turn around now and to mentor other people at the apprenticeship stage and take one person, just one person, take one person through that process. That's how they earn their dues. That's how they get to go to the next step, which is to become an apprentice manager. And an apprentice manager must be mentored by a master who's been through the process. And that ain't happening in your business, and that ain't happening in any business. And you know that's true because we think people manage people. They don't manage people. Somebody must engage somebody and take them through the process. My saxophone teacher said to me, I only teach people who want to become the best saxophone players in the world. You got a choice. I was 8 years old. The choice he gave me was impossible. No 8-year-old could do what Merle expected me to do, and I did it. Don't ask me why. I did it. I took a bus from Anaheim to Hollywood every Saturday by myself. He wouldn't let my parents take me. I practiced 3 hours a day from the age of 8 to the age of 19. If I missed once, he knew it. Sucker knew it. And I did it the first week, and he said, that's one, and there is no two. Next time, just don't bother coming. I blew it in the first week and had to practice between 8 and 19, 3 hours a day, because I wasn't patient enough to wait. I was testing my teacher. Merle said to me, you will find music when it's ready for you. Stop looking. Keep practicing. Practice, 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 practice. And suddenly, one moment, Merle would pick up his horn and play with me. And that was his acknowledgement. Never said a word. And the sound of the music was extraordinary. And that took me for another 6 weeks. We're all concerned about self-esteem. The fact of the matter is, self-esteem is inside. It's not something you can give somebody. Merle gave me the ability to be a man at 8 years old who had the ability to search for something that was ineffable, the sound of music. Without information, there's nothing. Without information, you're just guessing. Without information, you can't quantify anything. Without information, you can't know how well it worked. You can't know if this process produced 16% more or 3% more or 2% more than that process. You can't know what you need to know. You need an information system that is totally integrated in your business. Don't tell me you're too small. Fact of the matter is, you're not. If you're a one-person business working at home, you need a turnkey system, software system, that will enable you to begin using the skills that I'm talking about to begin to produce the results that you can only imagine. Does it work? You can't believe how well. Is it a joy? Without a doubt. So those are the seven steps of a business development program, a management development program, building the business within the enterprise. And if every manager within every enterprise were doing the work that I'm talking about, and if every manager in every enterprise were using the same language, and if every manager in every business working within every enterprise understood that without a vision, we ain't going anyplace.
And so it's incumbent upon the entrepreneur, the entrepreneurial leader of this business, to create a vision with such clarity, such definition, that everyone in the business can understand it and manifest it where they are. Until that happens, you're in the wrong business. And so your job is to change the business from the ground up. Your job is to understand it, to take it in, to seize the day, to take it to heart, to take it as your mission, not your mission statement, but your mission. Remember, like the Blues Brothers said, I'm on a mission from God. Your mission to transform the world around you. That's your job. It's nobody else's job. And if you're the entrepreneur in your business, God help you if you don't make this possible for the managers you're creating as apprentices, as craftsmen, as masters. And if you don't have the benchmarks and the process through which they're going to become that, you got to invent them. It's inventing a business that truly is transformative. Yes.
I work for an entrepreneurial type company, and now that I'm all enthusiastic about being an e-myth manager, do you have any recommendations as to how I may bring the message to the man with the vision?
Sure. The first way to bring the message to the man with the vision is to bring him the book and the audio tape. So Nightingale Conan, Nightingale Conan, I'm sure, could provide the audio tape, and I could provide the book, and get him to listen to the tape, and get him to read the book. Now, hear me. I said get him. The only thing you can do is hand it to him and say, this touched me so much. I knew, knowing you and how intelligent you are. You know, just like when you got married, you know what I mean? You're going to love it. And effectively, he either will or he won't. Do not say another word from that moment on. The only thing you can do is you can bring it to his attention. Do not try to enroll him. Now, what he might do is say, well, what's it about? And you can say, you know, the best way to find out is probably listen to the first tape. You know, take just a few minutes. I went to the event with a man who did this, and candidly, I wouldn't trust myself to share with you what it's about. All I can tell you is it's compelling, and it's about you, and it's about this business. See, there's a way. Don't do too much. And then he either will or he won't. Let me tell you, he will or he won't. If he does, he will or he won't be attracted. If he is, then he'll say, thanks for the book. And you'll say, now let's have a conversation about it, because I want to bring it to work in my area of accountability. And that's the way you get started. Okay? Yes?
Yeah. Problem I've got is I've got all kinds of ideas and things, and I'm bouncing from one place to another. And I might have some dream schemes, and I'm 50 years old. And then all of a sudden, you get involved with other people, and you tell them what you want to do and how you want to do it, and you get excited about it. And then all of a sudden, the other people want to steal your dream. And they kind of tell you, you can't do this and you can't do that. How can you get focused on something instead of going through all these 20 things that you want to do and get done to focus on one idea that you could be good at? I started a kitchen business at one time. And I did it. And my wife said one day, listen, either the business goes or yours goes. I didn't get married to you for being in a job for 80 hours. And I said, not a contest. I will just quit the business.
Oh, I'm glad you said that. I thought you were going to say, and so I left her.
Well, still, this is my third marriage.
Right.
You know? Okay. So,
yeah,
tired of doing it.
Okay, so let me respond to your question. There's a great tape Nightingale Conan publishes called The Enneagram. The Enneagram. E-N-N-E-A. G-R-A-M. Get the tape. If you don't get the tape, buy a book. It's called The Enneagram. When you read that book, you'll discover you. The Enneagram has 9 points. It's an old Sufi, S-U-F-I system of personalities. Personalities are strategies that we adopt to protect our essence from being destroyed in life. I know your personality because yours is mine. But I'm not going to tell you what mine is until you read the book. When you read the book, you'll see yourself. The minute you see yourself, you'll know that what you're talking about is your vice. Now, hear me when I say vice. I don't mean vice in the sense that one talks about vice. I'm talking about your vice. That's your point's vice. Now this, now that, now this, now that, now this, now that, and never, ever sticking in the center of one thing, which means continuous attraction. New ideas, new ideas, new ideas, new ideas, new woman, new woman, new ideas, new this, new this. I know what you're talking about. Your sobriety comes from finding something that's truly important to you and then staying the course. Your work becomes being between that and not feeling dead in the process. Because what happens the minute you stay a course is you feel confined. And the minute you feel confined, you feel like you're about to die. And the minute you feel like you're about to die, you find something else to be attracted to. You know it, I know it, and it will kill you. Because you'll never get beyond doing it, doing it, doing it, this, that, this, that, this, that, this, that. Nothing will ever mature, including you. I know that because you are me. So get the book, read it, remember what I said, and then find something that matters to you. Thanks. One last question.
If an employee no longer shares your vision, are there some steps that you can take to get that person back on track?
Yeah, it's termination. Soft-hearted guy. Yeah, right. You got to go back to the beginning. See, it's like start your relationship all over again. The only way you can get to the point where you need to be, you have to start your relationship all over again. Meaning, you know, I think we better go. Let's go have dinner and let's start all over again. You rehire them. And then you begin to see what's going off. And if you can't come into alignment, it's the time to separate. I mean, it's that simple. But understand that if you were to hire people knowing that people are not going to stay with you for the rest of their life, you understand the average manager stays with a company today for only 3 years? You know that? The average person stays with a company for only 3 years today? See, if you were to accept the fact that people are not going to stay because they have something else, everything's changing, the question becomes, what's going to happen in the 3 years they're with me? What can I give them in the 3 years they're with me? What can they give me in the 3 years we're together? And I'm willing to accept you're leaving. But the fact of the matter is, what I want to do in the relationship for that time is to add real value. I want to add value to your life, and I want you to add value to mine. So that agreement, that alignment, what happens is that we forget about all that. We go to sleep about the people we got, don't we? And we go to sleep. Go to sleep in relationship. I mean, it's a simple fact of the matter, you know. We go to sleep. And the problem is we have to wake up. The opportunity is to wake up. So it'll be interesting when you engage that person and you begin to realize that you don't have any clarity. And probably the business has changed significantly from the time that when he first came to you than today. And yet nobody's really paid attention to that change. Ladies and gentlemen, a delight. Thank you very much. I hope to see you all again. Bye-bye.
We hope you enjoyed Michael Gerber and his classic program, The E-Myth Manager. We are sure that you have gained a wealth of new ideas that you can immediately apply to your business. so your business gives you more life rather than consuming your life. But this is just a taste of all the incredible products and services that eMyth Worldwide and Nightingale Conant have to offer for existing or aspiring entrepreneurs. How would you like to take the material you learn to the next level by customizing it to your particular business? How would you like to do this in an interactive format, allowing you to discuss your business issues in a forum with a qualified eMyth coach and other entrepreneurs like yourself? Best of all, how would you like to participate in such a forum for free? If you answered yes to any of these questions, you are ready for the eMyth Experience. What is the eMyth Experience? It's a free preview of the cornerstone of the eMyth curriculum, the eMyth Mastery Program. What will you get out of it? Well, for starters, how to think about working on your business instead of just in it. The importance of establishing your company's identity. Why you should consider your business as a prototype for 5,000 others. Whether you are thinking as a technician, a manager, or an entrepreneur, and the radically different ways each one thinks about time, money, and work. What it means for your business to have true value. How much you are paying for the pleasure of doing the wrong work every day. How to delegate without abdicating. Why it is systems, not people, in your business that produce exponential growth. How to do strategic work instead of tactical work. How does the eMyth Experience work? 1. You can either fill out the online registration form by visiting www.nightingale.com, that's www.nightingale.com, and clicking on our link to the eMyth Experience. Or you can call eMyth Worldwide directly to register, toll-free in the United States and Canada, 1-800-221-0266. That's 1-800-221-0266. 2. An eMyth program advisor contacts you by phone to help you choose a date and time to start your eMyth Experience. 3. We email or fax you a free packet of business development materials that you will use during your eMyth Experience sessions. 3. A few days before your eMyth Experience, your program advisor contacts you again to make sure that you've received your business development materials and spends about 20 minutes with you in a dynamic needs analysis exercise that will help you define your areas of focus for the eMyth Experience. 4. You call your assigned telephone number at the scheduled date and time for your eMyth Experience, again, toll-free in the United States and Canada. Be prepared to see how you can free yourself from your daily routine, reconnect with your vision, and build a business that works, a business that delivers what it promises, the first time, every time. So what's the catch? There isn't one. The entire eMyth Experience is free. There is no obligation. This is our gift to you, because we know that the very best way for you to understand the difference that the eMyth Mastery Program can make in your business and your life is to experience it for yourself. Sign up now. Either register online at www.nightingale.com, that's www.nightingale.com, and clicking on our link to the eMyth Experience, or you can call eMyth Worldwide directly, toll-free in the U.S. and Canada, at 1-800-221-0266. That's 1-800-221-0266. Take the powerful eMyth concepts to the next level with the eMyth Experience.
This is the end of Side 12. Side 11 is already queued up for your listening.